I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope today. It's been over three decades since Elvis Presley died, and you'd think by now just every aspect of his life had been dissected. But no, Lana Nash does explore new territory in her book for HarperCollins with Baby Let's Play House. She explores the many women in his life, how they influenced him, what he really wanted in a woman and was seemingly never able to find out and to get. Anne Margaret, Linda Thompson, Sybil Shepherd, Wanda Jackson all make appearances here, and there are loads of photographs that have never been seen before in public, and it brings Lana Nash to our studios. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
It's a really, it's a fun book. It's a fun read. This is not your first on Elvis, so obviously you like him and like covering him.
This is actually my fourth Elvis book, and as a matter of fact, I had a woman come to a book signing who said, "Faux Elvis book?" She said, "Honey, you got to get a new boyfriend."
You can almost see the women going crazy when you think about Elvis Presley. You tell the story, and I never heard this about girls, literally running headstrong right into police to try to, I guess, get closer to him during a concert.
Right, in 1956. Girls were so hysterical when he got up there and did his gyrations and sang his sexy songs. And of course, he was gorgeous. Let's face it. He was not a ruggedly handsome man. He was beautiful. And young girls especially found him completely irresistible. And they'd run right into the police line and bounce off of them and then pick themselves up and run again, trying to get to him.
A lot of stars don't like that overwhelming adulation. What was his reaction to that?
Oh, he loved it. He loved it. He was the kind of guy who craved and needed the attention of women. So young girls, older women, you name it, he was thrilled to have their adulation.
You talk about how beautiful he was, and he was, and there's a picture that I'd never seen before of his parents, of Gladys and Vernon, and you can just, he was really good looking, the father.
Yes.
And you could tell that just move these two DNAs right together, and that's how you get him.
It's true. That's a wonderful picture. It's their wedding picture, so to speak, taken at around the time of their wedding. You know, she was older than Vernon, and she didn't want anybody to know that. And it was something that Elvis didn't really realize, but it fed into his obsession with the time that she died, as a matter of fact, the age that she died.
This book is quite a tome you have here. This is, I don't know how many pages, but it's a lot. How many people did you interview for this book?
Oh, gosh. Well, I had quite an archive of people that I've interviewed who passed on, so I don't count those, but I did, I guess, 40 or 50 new interviews and then with women, and then I interviewed a number of men around him as well.
And they were all forthcoming. They all wanted to tell their story.
Almost everybody. Priscilla and Lisa Marie did not cooperate, but they have their own books, and I understood that. But most women, you know, I found that women who knew him from the 50s, the 60s, or the 70s still had tremendous emotion for him. I was surprised how many women sobbed when we talked about him. They really still have tremendous feeling for him.
Did you talk to Anne Margaret about this?
No, she won't talk about him, period.
And what's brought you back to this time and time again, to the Elvis story?
Well, I'd written books from the viewpoint of men who were near Elvis, so the Memphis Mafia. I wrote a book about Colonel Tom Parker. But, you know, Elvis was such a woman-centered man because of his closeness with his mother. And I had a couple of questions about him, like, what is it like to be the premier male sex symbol of the 20th century, and how would that impact your relationships? And since he did revere and truly love women, why did he not have a long-lasting romantic sexual relationship with a woman? I mean, his marriage, really, he was cheating on every woman he was ever involved with. And why was that? Those were questions I wanted to answer.
Part of the answer, I'm assuming, is that relationship with his mother. Talk about who she was and what their relationship was and why it was so special and maybe even unusual.
Well, it's a very unusual relationship. First of all, Elvis was a twin. His name was Elvis Aaron Presley. The twin was Jesse Garron.
You know, either I'd never heard that or had forgotten it, an identical twin?
He thought so, and the Presleys thought so. She felt that way when she was pregnant. I don't think there's any way to determine whether that was true or not, but this child arrived stillborn. And Elvis transferred his feelings for that twin onto his mother. His father went to prison when Elvis was three for altering a check. And Gladys then transferred some of her feelings for Vernon onto Elvis. And by the time Vernon came home from prison, there really was not room for him in the household. And in fact, there was not room for anybody else in either of their lives. And that was a huge problem for Elvis when it came to women.
More than a stage mother? What else was unusual about that relationship with his mother? He'd always call her my best gal.
Well, he considered himself, they had a complete role reversal. He considered her his baby. He had survivor guilt. So he felt so pained that this child, his brother, had died. He felt somehow that maybe he had been responsible for that. So he always petted her, even as a 3- and 4-year-old child. He would pet her and say, what can I do for you, my baby? So he took care of her all the time. It's very interesting to see pictures of him with her, even when he's with another woman. He doesn't want to slight her, so if he has his arm around another woman, he also touches his mother at the same time so she doesn't feel left out.
Clearly, he was a charmer. One of the things that was interesting in the book is that, yes, he was with so many women, and he'd be with a lot of women when he was supposed to be with another woman, but they all felt, the women would say invariably, what we had was special.
Yes.
Somehow they felt like they were the one.
Yes, he made a number of women feel that way, but there never really was a one, except perhaps Anne Margaret. Other than his mother, Anne Margaret was the relationship. And, you know, I think it was the only real adult relationship that he had. He was stuck. He was stuck emotionally at about 14 or 15. He never quite grew beyond that because of this lethal enmeshment with his mother psychologically.
And how long was the relationship with Anne Margaret?
Well, it lasted only officially a period of months, but that friendship never wavered. They were... He went to see her every time he could see her, and he would get down on one knee, even after they'd both married, and tell her that he still felt the way he had before. And she knew on the day he died that something was wrong because she had just opened in Vegas, and he had not sent his usual bouquet of flowers in the shape of a guitar. So they were really connected. I mean, she was his mirror image in many, many ways. I think if they had ended up together, his story would have turned out differently.
There's a lot of sex in your book,
yeah.
But not all the relationships were sexual. I'm not even sure I can use the word platonic. Maybe you can describe it. One particular one that fascinated me was Anita Wood. He courted her. He loved her.
Yes.
He bought her expensive gifts. He asked her to move in.
Yes.
I don't guess they really ever had sex, or it seems like they didn't.
I think not. His mother set him up to have two different kinds of relationships. He was expected to have steady girlfriends at home. But those were virginal relationships. These were women he was courting to marry. And then he had the traveling girls, as Gladys called them. And he was free to sow his wild oats with those girls. So, yes, he loved Anita desperately. He wrote her very passionate letters from the Army. I have excerpts from them in the book. But in the Army he met Priscilla Beaulieu. And that took care of Anita.
And was Priscilla, in a way, a prototype that he'd always been looking for, in a way?
Yes, I think because he was stuck at 14, she was 14 years old.
When they met.
When they met. He was 10 years older. But he really identified with the 14-year-old, and he saw his twin as stuck at 14. So he was looking for a woman who would replicate his twin, who would be a stand-in for himself, but also have a strong mothering streak to stand in for his mother, who had just died when he met Priscilla. She did not have that strong mothering streak, but he thought she looked a lot like his mother when she was young. So he had to have her.
A lot of people talk about his appearance on the Sullivan Show, but you really think his appearance on the Milton Berle Show was a bigger turning point. Why is that?
Right, in June of 1956. That's where he did a slowed-down, halftime version of Hound Dog, and he introduced the grind, not the bump and grind, but the grind. But we had never seen a white man on television doing anything like this before. I mean, it was burlesque, and drummer DJ Fontana had played strip joints and slowed it down to a strip rhythm. The nation was outraged. I mean, you go back and look at some of those newspaper reports, and they really saw him as a threat to the morals of America.
I thought that was really interesting because we think about, you know, quote-unquote black moves or sexual moves. I hadn't really thought about it in the terms of borrowing from the burlesque, but it seems more obvious now that you mention it. You write about the Louisiana Hayride radio show, which sounds like it was sort of a counterpoint to the Grand Ole Opry, I guess.
Exactly.
And that being a big turning point in his life, why was that?
Well, he bombed out during his Opry audition, so there really wasn't any place for him to go to a kind of barn dance like that, except down to the Hayride. And he became quite famous there. He became very, very popular, and he was sent out on the road to the shows, and he really honed his movements and his stage presence there. And you know, it was really he got some of his moves from black entertainers. He got he shook his leg because Big Chief Jim Weatherington of the Statesman Gospel Group did that. But he got two of his signature moves from women during this, or certainly one of them during that Hayride period, from a 17-year-old girl named Kay Wheeler who taught him a dance step she perfected called the Rock and Bop. So it's fascinating to me that he also learned that the big bump from the Bump and Grind from a stripper named Tura Satana. So here's women teaching a kind of androgynous looking man how to turn on women. It's fascinating.
And when it comes down to it, it's just a dance move, but what it did to people, unbelievable. We're talking to Elena Nash, her new book, Baby Let's Play House, Elvis Presley and the Women Who Loved Him. I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate today. Let's go through some of the rumors about him. There'd been a long-held story that he'd never be intimate with a woman who had had a child. Is that true?
That's what people thought. It turns out he didn't want to be intimate with a woman who had had his child because it was too close to his relationship with his mother. But I found three women who had children, and he knew that they had children. And, in fact, he played with one, the little girl of one of those women. So, but I think it's no coincidence that that little girl's name was Jessie. I think that's one reason he liked her so much. But no, it's not true that he wouldn't have be intimate with a woman who had a child, just not his child, which of course meant he could never have a successful marriage and family.
And so many women in his life, no love children, no children out of wedlock, or maybe one or two.
I think there are children out there, but no one has come, according to the estate, no one has come forward with a DNA match. But I think there's some kids out there from the Hayride period.
You do tell a story in which people have come forward, but maybe were sort of just turned back, or they just wanted to keep the secret?
Yes, there was one woman in particular who talked to the host of the Louisiana Hayride some years later, and he believed that, from what this woman told him, that indeed her daughter was Elvis's child.
And he did a thing, little baby talk with them. What was that about?
Well, he and his mother, first of all, Elvis was what is sometimes called a twinless twin. I worked with psychologist Peter Whitmer, who wrote The Inner Elvis very closely on this book. And there's a phenomenon, the twinless twin. And twins often have their own language, their own twin speak. And if there isn't a twin around, in Elvis's case, then they'll speak that with whoever they're close to. And in his case, it was Gladys. But he made every significant girlfriend learn that secret language.
You've written another biography, as I mentioned, on Tom Parker. What was his relationship to the women? Was he
was terrified?
Was he getting women for Elvis, or was he keeping them away?
No, he wanted Elvis to stay away from them, particularly young girls. He was terrified of Elvis being around young girls. Although Elvis really wanted more to mentor young girls than do anything else with them, and because he felt he was the same age, he wanted to help protect them, bring them up. But the Colonel was terrified of Anne Margaret, certainly, because she was an adult, she was in show business, she was successful, and she could tell Elvis that not all managers took 25 or 50%, as the Colonel did. So the Colonel was terrified of that relationship.
When his mother, Gladys, died, his mourning went beyond normal grief. Tell us about that.
Well, it was essentially a double death for him, because now he had lost his last thread with Jesse Garon. And he had never really fully grieved the death of that twin. So now he had lost both of them. And he got something called stuck grief or complicated grief, grieving that goes beyond the normal terrible loss we feel when we lose a parent. But he was never really able to climb out of that. And toward the end of his life, he really just wanted to be mothered. He wanted to be reunited with her. He even held seances to try to be reunited with her toward the end of his life.
And did that change his relationship with women?
Yes, because he didn't want to date a woman his own age. You know, he died at 42, but the woman he died with was 20, for example. He wanted these young girls to have the strong mothering streak, and a lot of them didn't. They didn't know how to replicate that relationship for him. So it fed into his frustration in all of his romantic relationships.
We mentioned Priscilla. Why did he eventually get married then?
Oh, there was a lot of pressure from her stepfather, who had allowed her to move into Graceland when she was 16, on the promise that Elvis would marry her. And then the colonel was getting a little nervous. You know, Jerry Lee Lewis had married his 13-year-old cousin. There was just huge outcry about that. And the colonel was afraid that the news would get out that Priscilla had been living at Graceland all these years.
And talk about Graceland for a moment. In a way, it's not just a home. He built that for his mother.
He didn't build it, actually. He did buy it. It was built already. It was a farm. It was a working farm. But yes, he wanted to, when he was living in the housing project, he vowed to a young woman I interviewed, his prom date, 14-year-old Regis Wilson. Interesting that he was already dating a 14-year-old at 18. That what he wanted most was to buy a nice home for his mother. And they got run out of Audubon Drive, the house he first built when he became famous, because the fans were disturbing the neighbors. So they were looking for something farther out, something with grounds to keep them from being bothered all the time. And that's how he ended up with Graceland. But, you know, Gladys wasn't comfortable there. It was too grand. She wanted to feed her chickens. She wanted to go back to Tupelo, Mississippi, where she'd grown up. She was very unhappy there.
I've toured it. It's always great fun to be there. Is there any comparison to any rock stars of today?
Lots of overlap with Michael Jackson, of course.
Anybody else come to mind?
Well, you know, Elvis was the blueprint for all of the rock and rollers who followed. So you see a little bit of Elvis in so many people.
We think of him, and you chronicle all of his exploits in here, yet he loved gospel. Something deeply religious in him. Was that a contradiction then somewhere?
You know, he didn't have any sort of there's only one time that I found. He went to his minister, his Assembly of God minister, at the height of his fame in 1957 and said, you know, "Pastor, I'm the most miserable young man you've ever seen. I'm not doing the things you told me to do, and I'm doing the things you told me not to do." So he did have some chaotic feelings there about perhaps not ascribing to the tenets of the Assembly of God Church, but it didn't really stop him from doing it, whatever he wanted to do.
I can't get past that it might have been an identical twin, and we might have had two people that looked like Elvis. You must have given that some thought.
I have. I've thought about that. I don't think he would have been driven to be the artist that he was had the twin survived. And if his mother had lived, I think the story would have turned out differently, too. It's interesting to think about.
If she had lived and if Jesse had lived, too, I
both
guess.
Both of them,
yeah, it
right.
would have been a different story. You're reputed to be the first journalist to see Elvis Presley in his casket. Is that true? How'd that happen?
I'm not sure it's totally true. It just happened by a fluke. I was there representing the Louisville Courier-Journal with another reporter from the paper, a columnist named John Filiatro, and the security guard just came and stopped in front of us and said, members of the press who wish to attend the viewing, line up.
It's a fascinating read. It's a fun read. It's a large read. There's a lot here. You've done a lot of research on it. I've been speaking with Alana Nash for her book, Baby, Let's Play House, from HarperCollins. Alana will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Ocean County Library in Toms River, New Jersey. For more info, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Thanks so much for being here today, Alana.
Elliot, thank you so much.